So thank you, Charlotte, to be one of my guests. And I'm so happy. So thank you for this opportunity. And I will go straight to my first question. November is an important month. It's prostate cancer, but it's diabetes awareness month. So from what you can tell us from a young woman like you that had a bachelor degree in psychology and having an interest in diabetes, where did it all start?
The connection between psychology and diabetes. So when I was studying my degree, I was really interested in the coping mechanisms that people employ when they are diagnosed with a chronic condition. So some people will maybe see the funny side of things. Some people will maybe take a religious or spiritual stance. And that has a real impact on how people then go on to not only manage their condition, but the health outcomes that they get as well. So I was particularly interested in that. And I've been working for Diabetes Digital Media now for 6 years. And when I started, I was, so I run the operations, but really what I've been doing in the last 3 or 4 years is looking at all of the data that we're collecting through both structured data and unstructured data on the diabetes.co.uk forum, structured surveys and data that we've been collecting through there. And then really what we've been doing is applying psychology and artificial intelligence, which I feel has a really neat interaction to develop digital health solutions. So the low carb program launched on World Diabetes Day, which is November the 14th, 2015. So November is a super exciting month for us. The work that we're doing during Diabetes Awareness Month, this year we've got a huge campaign running where we're talking about food, and that obviously plays a significant role in the day-to-day management of diabetes. We're talking about misconceptions. We're doing a little bit where we're talking about how people manage their diabetes around the world and just how quite different that is. We're talking about Brexit, unfortunately, and how that may impact diabetes management in the UK specifically. And then we're really just building the awareness and the understanding around diabetes a bit more. So where people maybe don't understand type 2 diabetes, it's previously been understood to be a chronic and progressive disease. And the work that we're doing, the data we're collecting, is going to demonstrate that in a huge proportion of cases, there is a lot that people can do to actually put their type 2 diabetes into remission. So just raising awareness of that and the methods and empowering people with the tools to do that.
Yeah, like I'm Canadian, but from a Asian heritage, and in Haiti, it's unbelievable the number of people that are suffering from diabetes type 2, but they don't know. But again, it's a country that financially it's not easy. How can you guys could maybe help, or do you have plans to help people in third world country?
I think that's definitely in our long-term plans. I think the work that we're doing at the moment is scaling out our digital health solutions, primarily the low-carb program, into new territories. Yeah. And it's really important when we do that we consider the local health economy, the cultural norms, the food availability, and the types of things that people are actually doing to manage their diabetes. Without actually tailoring interventions to meet those needs, we just won't see the impact and we won't see the engagement that we've seen in the UK primarily.
Yeah, at first, and then we'll go further.
Yeah.
But I have a question for you. I'm not a scientist, my husband is, but I know a doctor could, you know, if he could spot someone that maybe could be a diabetes, have a diabetes. But is there any behavior that we could see us as human, like, you know, you're not feeling yourself, you're mad or itchy, or I don't know. Can we spot a behavior change in a diabetes patient, or it's less?
So with someone that's diagnosed, or before they're diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, there are certain symptoms that people might experience. So being very thirsty, urinating a lot, and feeling very tired and lethargic. And obviously that would indicate you might need to go and get your blood test checked anyway. But it's not something like you see someone walking towards you down the street and you think, oh my goodness, they're coming towards me with diabetes.
Yeah, it's
so not really in that way that you would kind of see any kind of physical symptoms. Mm-hmm. Obviously with type 2 diabetes, there's a huge correlation between being overweight and obesity with type 2 diabetes. But again, you couldn't necessarily assume that every person that's overweight is type 2 diabetic.
But psychology is, you know, someone, I think of my mom a few years ago. She didn't know she's not diabetes, but her doctor said, oh, you should be careful. And I saw a swing mood. You know, she has swing mood. And when she drank sugary drinks, she was more agitated than when she was not drinking. So I was like, okay, when the doctor said, okay, your mom maybe could be in this bad road, I was like, oh, maybe I should check with a swing mood. I think it's very important for people to be aware of. It's not only physically.
So within the low-carb program, we have a number of things that people are able to track, and they're able to track their health data. And one of those measures is mood. And that was really important when we were considering the factors that we wanted to analyze, the impact that mood actually has in correlation between mood and blood glucose readings. And so one of the things that we've built into the application is an area that provides insights to people. So they may not know that when their blood glucose levels goes in a certain direction, whether that be high or low, it may actually impact their mood. So by collecting that data, that could be something that we'd be able to demonstrate in the future. From my limited knowledge in that space, I'm not sure if there's anything that's said categorically that you would have mood swings based on your glucose levels.
I read a few years ago in our Quebecer big journal, like The Guardian, La Presse, there were an article about a man that had type 2 diabetes, and he changed his diet completely. He was exercising, and he changed his diet to the low carbs diet. And I checked on your website, and I saw, oh, girl, she is promoting the diet, the low carb diet. Woo-hoo. I'm sorry, I'm overwhelmed. So I will come back to my natural self. So I was like, is there any stories you want to share with us?
Yeah. So when we first put the diabetes.co.uk forum live about 13 years ago, the very first question on there is, can I eat oranges? So from the very beginning of our organization's inception, everything has had we've had a massive focus on food.
Yeah.
People are very unaware of what they should and shouldn't be eating. When you get a diagnosis of, say, type 2 diabetes or pre-diabetes, your healthcare professional or doctor might say, go and make some changes to your diet and come back when you've lost weight or you've made some changes. People don't actually know what that means. What is a healthy diet and how does that get defined? With the diabetes.co.uk forum, because we're not necessarily affiliated to the National Health Service, we're not a charity, we were able to allow completely open discussions. So there's moderation on the forum if there was someone that was coming on and saying something that isn't appropriate, but there's no censorship. So for example, people were able to be talking about a low carbohydrate diet since 2005 2006, and from that we were really able to analyze the data and seeing that there is this population where they're reducing their carbohydrate intake and they're seeing significant health improvements. And it makes perfect sense. If you think of a peanut allergy, you wouldn't necessarily tell the person to be eating lots of peanuts and then medicate when they have an allergic reaction.
Yeah.
You say maybe avoid peanuts. And that's similar with type 2 diabetes. So it can be and was understood to be an intolerance to sugar. And so when you actually think about what are the root causes that we can actually modify in terms of our behavior and the foods and the choices that we're making, it makes perfect sense to reduce your carbohydrate intake. It's not for everyone. And one of the things that we've been really, that's been critical for us as an organization is to give people choice.
Yes.
We want to make sure that if it's not right for them, that it's not the only way that they can go. And so that's where we're developing with the low carb program and why we're moving into rebranding that as Grow. So it's more holistic. Mm-hmm. It's talking about things beyond just nutrition. And again, within that, we're providing people with different mechanisms to put their type 2 diabetes into remission. So the low carb program was launched in November 2015.
Okay.
And we've had over 375,000 people who have gone through that program. And we've just recently published our one-year outcomes. So we randomly selected 1,000 patients with type 2 diabetes as they were starting the program, and we're tracking them for 3 years. And the one-year and two-year data that's just under review at the moment is really significant in terms of looking at the way that a digital intervention can actually impact health outcomes.
I can't wait. We should, in Canada, I think a lot of people, a lot of students, I'm working at the University of Montreal. Yes, I have a double life, like James Bond or whatever. And even when I see in the morning on the subway, they have this sugary, you know, high caffeine drinks. And I'm like, gosh, no. Oh, I need more carbs. And they're like, maybe it's not the way to go. And it's they start so young, and after that,
yeah. So the absolutely fundamental point of the low carb program is reducing the amount of sugar that you're eating.
Yeah.
There's no nutritional benefit from eating lots of sugar, and so if, I think everyone within the health community agrees that if we can reduce your sugar intake, it's not going to have a negative implication at all. We've recently just launched the low carb program in Canada, so we now have the program that's available both in Canadian English and Canadian French, and that was a big project that we worked on. To not only look at localizing the content in terms of the language, but actually looking at the local health economy, understanding what people in Canada are actually eating. I spent a lot of time in Loblaws going and scanning foods to checking that our barcode scanner was picking up the right foods. And so that's now available in Canada across the whole
country. Yeah, I think we'll get in a good track for eating better, especially the kids. The kids, they are maybe 10 years younger than me. I have a pop culture question for you.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. when you try to relax after a long day or to just disconnect, what is your go-to your playlist, your favorite playlist on your iPhone or smartphone? What song do you have to put you in the mood, like, okay, let's party, in my head?
Oh, it depends if we're going for party or relaxing.
Okay, relaxing and then party.
So for relaxing, I work with one of the best transpersonal psychologists.
Okay.
And he's taught me for years about meditation and mindfulness and just how important it is to have an appropriate practice. And I think especially when you're in a job that means that there's lots of traveling around, there's lots of people that need lots from you, I think it's quite good to turn off your email and text message and WhatsApp notifications on your phone and just relax and do a little bit of mindfulness. And then getting in the party mood, don't really party because don't really have that much time.
Or at home, in front of the TV and a small radio or something is playing on your...
I was in... So I went for a work trip to Amsterdam and I stayed in an Airbnb a couple of months ago. And someone had the man that owns the house, he had his Sonos set up and he had his playlist. It was called I Like My Disco Funky Baby. And it literally is just straight funk. So I found that on Spotify and just that's on repeat in the morning.
Yeah. Okay, I need to get it. What's the name again?
I Like My Disco Funky Baby.
Oh my goodness. I love Spotify. I love it. So I love asking this question. It will be our last question because you're one busy woman. What legacy do you want to leave for the next generation?
I think the work that we're doing in Touch Diabetes, really redefining it as something that patients can be empowered and they can put Touch Diabetes into remission by changing their diet and lifestyle. I think one of the most important things that we can do is share that data with the academic and just the general community. And I think that's one of the things that I would really like to say that we've played a big part in, making sure that data is accessible and people that are going to be taking this to the next generation would be able to have access to.
Yeah, that's a beautiful legacy. Thank you, Charlotte.
Oh, thank
and
you so
I hope you
me.
Will enjoy the rest of the Web Summit.
Thank you very much.
I will go see your talk this afternoon.
You.
I will be like, woohoo, go, Charlotte. And then the guy will say, okay, lady, Canadian lady, come on.
You need to sit down now.
Sit down. Okay, I will sit.
So enjoy the conference.